The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
All right, y'all, welcome to a new episode of the Atlantic Division Mixtape. I'm your host, Jazz Kang. Before we jump into things, don't forget, subscribe to the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. Don't forget to check us out at Nets Daily, Celtics Blog. We're going to have you covered for, I want to say, so far, the best division in the NBA. I don't know if I'm confident in saying that because, I mean, you look at the fact that four of the five teams are in, not play-in, but playoff positions from the Atlantic. Obviously, you got big fan bases, so we're going to jump into kind of the latest happenings with that. Sorry we haven't been around the last few weeks. Promise you, though, from now on, we'll be doing this every Friday. Joining me, as he always does, he covers the Nets for our sister site at SB Nation Nets Daily. Also does some work for SI as well, Mr. Chris Milholland. Chris, first off, Happy New Year. We haven't talked since the
Happy
the
New calendar. Year, brother. Yeah,
the calendar.
New Year, same pod.
Over. Yeah, New Year, same pod and same shitty ass people, I guess. That's what we're gonna go with. But that's my detrimental Canadian humor, by the way. But looking at this right now, let's jump right into it. The Nets, the team that you cover, you're all over them. Yep. Go to a lot of practices, go to a lot of home games. Came up short in their game last night against the Celtics, who are the best team, really, if you look at it in the entirety of the Eastern Conference and in the NBA, at 31-12 now. Obviously, no Kevin Durant in the lineup. We're expected that he's going to be back in roughly a month, close to the deadline. The Nets really hung around with the Celtics throughout yesterday. I caught a bit of the game. It was close. It was a 2-point lead for Boston going into the final quarter. Celtics ended up really putting the clamps down and outscoring Brooklyn 25-16 in the fourth to get a 109-98 win. You're looking at this Nets squad, and we'll jump into some Boston talk here in a minute. You're looking at this Nets squad, though. No KD, as I mentioned, for a month. The guy was averaging just under 30 points a game. He's been phenomenal throughout the season. But you're looking at this now, and in the upcoming schedule, they got a West Coast road trip. Going to take on teams like Golden State, teams like Phoenix, teams like the Sixers. Tough matchups coming up. How do you think they're going to hold up without KD in the lineup for like I said, about another 4 weeks here?
You know, it's so hard to tell, right? Because like when we were like talking about it after the injury and when the injury occurred, and like obviously when you see those type of injuries, you just have to wait to see what the MRI scan reveals, right? Whether it's as detrimental as, you know, can't get any worse from a torn MCL or ACL to as something minor as a hyperextended knee. And that's not even you could classify it as minor because that usually sidelines you from 3 to 4 weeks, right? So when the MRI results came out on the Monday, it revealed that it was an isolated MCL sprain, which is the same injury that that Kevin had last year with Brooklyn, right? And when you look at that stretch where the Nets had it last year, that was kind of the beginning of the downfall for the Nets whole season last year, right? Because they went on a huge slump in the 15 games or in the games that he missed. I think it was 11-game losing streak. That's when the ripple effects of Harden wanting out started to begin. Obviously, had Kyrie Irving's vaccine. Obviously he couldn't play in a lot of the games on the road. It was only, at home he could only play on road games, which was very few out of that own stretch. And, you know, less than a month later, boom, Harden's out. You know, Kevin's obviously sidelined still. So this time around, you know, it's a lot different because the Nets, that it's a kind of a byproduct of the Nets did this offseason, bringing in guys like TJ Warren, Yuta Watanabe, right? So they can help lift up the scoring punch. You saw that yesterday from TJ Warren, who delivered 20 points off the bench. That was his second 20-point game of the year. But, you know, this year, you know, I think they'll be able to kind of nurse the absence well. Obviously, you can't replace Kevin Durant's production from a single player. It would have to be a collective, and you can't even kind of rebound from that, right? It's kind of how can you just piece together the pieces and kind of stay afloat and survive through this stretch, right? And obviously, mm-hmm. there was no bigger test for them to start off against the, well, other than the Boston Celtics, right? So, you know, the game, it kind of replicated. It was the same similar theme that what happened when these two teams met in December. Their Nets enter the fourth. I think it was down by two or up by two. And then Boston put on the clamps. They started to pull away, and Brooklyn could never just get their feet underneath them. And Kyrie Irving, you could tell that he felt a little more pressure to take a lot of the shots in the fourth. And obviously, you know, it's a make or miss league, and that game went on the Nets' miss side. So sum it all up, you know, with Brooklyn, like, as long as they could stay afloat, I think these next kind of two games are coming up with the Thunder on Sunday and then the Spurs in the midway point of next week. Those are big games because they have to win those. Because if they lose those, then they'll be in some problems because the rest of the stretch ahead is pretty tough.
Yeah, and again, you know, you have Kyrie, so you have kind of the go-to scorer still. Seth Curry working his way back into, I think he can still have play at another level than where he's at right now. He's only, you know, played in 29 games so far this season, averaging 9 points. Not particularly shooting the rock well from the field, but from the three-point line, what we're accustomed to seeing from Seth, which is 42.4%. So again, they have enough talent to maybe stay afloat. Are they going to be able to stay in a playoff position necessarily in the top six? I think that might be tough considering the fact that only about a 4.5 game. Although, I mean, we'll stick with some Brooklyn top, Chris, but I want to ask you this. Looking at like the teams, like other than what May and Miami, obviously we know has really struggled, although they beat the Bucks on Thursday night. Nobody really I'm scared of that's going to catch Brooklyn. You know what I mean? Because you got Indiana, a team that's 23-19, a lot better than we expected. We thought the Pacers would be tanking at this point. Atlanta, a team that we thought would be better, especially after adding DeJounte Murray in the offseason. They're sitting at 19-22, ninth in the conference, and the Bulls have dealt with injuries and consistency. So again, maybe Brooklyn has enough to stay in the top six, but might not be able to. Looking at another guy who's been a lightning rod since he arrived, didn't play at all last season. Starting to work his way back this year. Sixers fans, you're all too familiar with him. I don't think you have a lot of Philly love for him, but Ben Simmons, looking at what he's been able to do, you're looking at him kind of gaining his stamina back, gaining his game form back. He's only averaging 7.5 points, shooting a respectable 58.2% from the field, although no three-point attempted at all. When you look at what he's bringing, where do you rank him, Chris? Like, do you look at a man and say, hey, he's delivered up to expectations, below expectations, or exceeded them? Where do you put Ben Simmons since he's got there?
I'd say it's a tale two halves, right? When Kevin's on the floor, he's doing exactly what the Nets need him to do, right? Mm-hmm. Get open shooters, push the break, facilitate the ball movement, kind of play hard defense, be a switchable defender, someone that can guard 1 through 5, if not the opposing team's best offensive player half the time, Zion. You know, you've seen it kind of glimpses throughout this kind of through the midway point of the season. But now that Kevin Durant is absent, now is the big point in the post game, right? Because when you looked at Ben Simmons last night against the Celtics, that would be Thursday night, he had a season-high 13 assists. The ball movement was going great. But in the fourth quarter, he was just way too passive, right? Mm-hmm. There was three drives that, you know, Sixers fans kind of emulate a little bit to this. There was drives where he literally was at the rim, had an open shot, and dumped it off to Nick Claxton down low. Tried to hit a shooter on the opposite corner on the weak side. Tried to shovel it off to someone that was cutting, right? And you see all those things. And there was an instance, I wouldn't call them boos, right? But I would call it, there was that drop off to Nick Claxton when he didn't go up. There were a few fans that did boo in the arena out of the 18,000 sellout crowd, right? There was a few of them that did boo. I'm not going to be the guy that characterizes as boos because, as you know, when you characterize boos, it would have to be a majority thing. But there were some fans that were very disgruntled with the fact that he did not look to score. So after the game, we all asked him kind of the mindset going into it. And, you know, he took accountability for it. He said, hey, like, I'm looking for my teammates too much. I know who I am. I know I need to score and all that stuff. So he acknowledged, the question is that going to come, right? Because when you look at a guy like Ben, he plays in a lot of stretches, and Vaughn did a perfect job of highlighting this, where it could be in the first 6 minutes of the game, Ben could score the first 6 or 8 points for the Nets, right? Get to the paint, play with aggression, play to score. Then after that, it's a facilitating fest. Or, you know, then he gets quiet offensively. It's outside of his facilitating. So the Nets need him to become a scoring threat, because especially with Kevin Durant not on the floor, that restricts the gravity for the shooters on the floor, right? Because especially for opposing defenses, they know that Ben Simmons is going to look for the trailing wing that's going to either spot up on the corners, spot up on the wings, or do a backdoor cut, right? And that's the Boston Celtics completely obviously sniffed that out once the fourth started. So obviously the turnovers start coming. But, you know, as long as he can kind of maintain himself as a scoring threat, then obviously that would open up a little more gravity, a little more wiggle room for shooters like Royce O'Neal, Joe Harris, Yuta Watanabe, and Seth Curry to really get open shots instead of grabbing the ball and having to kind of create a little bit of a shot, right? Or then you'd have to reset the play with 14 seconds on the shot clock. So, you know, if like I said, you know, if he could establish himself as a scoring threat, I think it'll help out with Kevin Durant's absence. But, like, you know, to answer the question entirely, with Kevin Durant on the floor, he's doing exactly what the team wants him to do and exactly what the team needs him to do. Without Kevin Durant on the floor, he's got to establish himself at least as a scoring threat, a drive threat, someone that could score in the paint.
Yeah, I want to see that from Ben too, right? Like, I mean, we've seen him kind of, again, shy away from being a true scorer, but at least trying to be aggressive in those situations. And like you mentioned, you know, without KD there alongside them, makes it a little bit difficult, right? With not having obviously one of the best players in the NBA, one of the best to do it of all time, that's going to have an impact on him. But again, this Nets team, I mean, you remember we were doing this a little bit in the beginning of the season, Chris, like talking about the Nets, and we're like, man, you know, it was a circus, right? What was going on under Steve Nash, and obviously got Jacques Vaughn coming in, and so again, we knew they had the talent. The question is, where they're going to be able to put it together? And I think they've answered that with that run when they were fully healthy over the past month or so. Switching gears to the Celtics, Chris, looking at this squad right now, got an impressive win, like I mentioned, against a shorthanded Nets squad on Thursday. Going to be without Jaylen Brown. Looks like for a week or two, he's dealing with an abductor injury. But the Celtics, man, I mean, got some good bench production against Brooklyn last night. Like I said, the NBA best 31-12. At this point, right where we expected the Celtics to be. Boston's won five in a row now after struggling a little bit after that hot start. When you look at this squad, and we're going to talk about this pretty much every Friday from now until the playoffs start, Chris, is this truly the team to beat in the NBA? Like you look around at what the lay of the land, and you look at where odds makers have you know this team sitting at in terms of winning a championship. You got, you know, they're the team, right? They're plus 390 on DraftKings. The Bucks at the second best, the Nets at the third best odds, and then you got Golden State at number four. Does that right? Like, are the Celtics truly like the elite squad in the NBA to you at this point?
100%. I think you could even agree on that. Like, you know, I think they're the consensus team to beat across the whole league, right? Because with the Boston Celtics, you see even last night what they did without Jaylen Brown, right? The Nets still can't find their number, right? I think that's nine straight losses against the Celtics for the Nets. I think that does include the postseason sweep. So, you know, they're the team to beat, because what the Celtics are doing is not just that they do an excellent job on their defensive coverages, turning that into offense, right? They do a great job of their sets offensively. You saw a lot of pick and pops. You saw a lot of just drag screens, dribble handoffs for Tatum. You know, they're really... When you really analyze how the Boston Celtics play, it's not like they're Mr. Fundamental like the Spurs, right? It's not like when the Spurs had their dynasty and everything was kind of fundamental. But they do a great job of being fundamental but also adding their own unique touch, right? And teams just can't solve that problem. Because when you look at the Celtics, you know, that obviously their size and length is their main catalyst for everything on both ends of the floor, right? They have they have a lot of length. They have a lot of size. They have a lot of guys that can stretch the floor. They have a strong bench. I can't really see them. They're not like the Nets. They're not going to be a big team. They're not going to be a team that really goes big at the trade deadline. Maybe at the buyout market, they may wave a guy and cut and grab someone off the waiver wire once the buyout market begins. But you know, with the Celtics, I think they're the consensus team to beat. And right now, like, you know, the thing that's scary too is like, with the Celtics, when you especially look at a guy like Jason Tatum, obviously he's putting himself together. I wouldn't really call it, I would call it career year, but obviously we're only halfway through the year. But yeah, you know, let's hear from you. I think they're the consensus P&B, don't you think it?
You know what? Like, you're looking at all the underlying numbers, Chris, and obviously the record states that they are the best team in the NBA, but you look at the fact that what they have. They're number two in offensive rating, number two highest scoring team in the league. You look at the defensive rating, they're number six, lead the league in net rating overall, outscoring opponents by 6.3 points per 100 possessions. All the metrics are there, right? And I'm not going to, and again, this is no disrespect to the Celtics. I think they are a phenomenal team. I don't know. I still feel I love Tatum, and I honestly do. I think he's great. I love Jaylen Brown. I love Robert Williams. Like, I like a lot of things about that team, but I don't know. I'm kind of stuck in this thing where, yeah, they got to the finals last year and they beat, you know, three pretty damn good teams to do it. Obviously sweeping Brooklyn in round one, that was easy, but then they got a win over the Bucks. They had to beat the Heat. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't easy for them to get there. I think they're susceptible to some lulls, and I think if you're playing against a team like, I don't want to say Brooklyn, because as you mentioned, the Celtics have dominated the Nets pretty easily or in recent history and in going back to the playoffs, but I think if a team like Milwaukee still has something to say about it. So I mean, I have Boston at the top of my pecking order. Whether or not that's going to be a am I 100% sure, like, you know, you're looking at obviously going back to those dominant Warrior squad where like, hey, those guys are going to win the championship. It's like Golden State and then everybody else. I don't really think it's like that, because I also think whoever comes out of the Western Conference is going to have to be damn good as well, whether it be Denver, Memphis, New Orleans, a new team like that. Maybe the Warriors get their shit together and start climbing up the standings. So, I mean, again, I have Boston at the top, but it's not like I'm coming from this place of, you know, they're completely, you know, the class of the NBA. I like them. I think they're good. But yeah, again, at this point, I'm not like, wow, they're completely going to be 100% the team to beat. When you're looking at Boston, though, and the last one, we'll talk about the Celtics here. Of course, you're looking at this Boston squad, 31-12, just over the midway point. What would you set as a good over under for them for wins at this point?
Over under, I would go, well, they're at 31-12 right now, midway through the season. Obviously, 50. 50 is kind of like, you know, I'd say over under, maybe 53.
Okay.
You know, I would go 53, 52. You know, so I would say something like that. Like, I don't know what the sports books have them as right now. Cause, like, you know, like, it's hard dictating the over-unders, like, in any sport, because obviously one injury could derail the whole thing, especially when they're without Jaylen Brown for at least, I think it's, like, 2 weeks, or it could stretch to three, depending on what the success of the team is in that span. But, I don't know, like, you know, low 50s. I would go low 50s. I would say Brooklyn for sure is probably in the high 40s, low 50s in that number, too. Obviously, that's a wide range for an over-under for an end-of-season total, especially for contending teams in the East. But, yeah, no, I would agree with that.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I think that's probably a good number. And I do think they're going to end up winning or having the best record in the East when all is said and done. Let's switch gears here before we jump into a break. Let's talk a little bit of Sixers. Obviously, the team, yep, that I cover for SB Nation for us over at Liberty Ballers. Sixers have been okay, obviously dealing with Joel Embiid injury problems. And, you know, he's been hobbling a lot lately, although he's put up 33 points a game over the last couple outings. A disappointing loss for the Sixers on Thursday. They came up short against a lowly OKC squad, losing 133-114. It's been interesting, Chris, because you're looking at this squad defensively before Tyrese Maxey came back, and Jackson Frank, who writes for us at Liberty Ballers, tweeted about this as well. Before Maxey came back, the Sixers were like a top two, top three defense throughout the time. And now Maxey's been back and they're starting to slide down. Again, I don't think anybody's expected Maxey to be this like Matisse Thybulle type shutdown guy, but it's having an impact on their defensive chemistry, because he did miss, you know, more than a month with his foot injury. I think guys were figuring out each other's tendencies, especially given the fact that you have to fill, you know, roughly 30 minutes a night with 35 minutes a night with Maxey being out. But I think that's going to take him some time to figure it out. Again, looking at the bigger picture, the Sixers are also 13-3 in their last 16 games. So they're starting to figure things out. Pardon me, 13-4 over the last 17 games. So starting to figure things out. When you're looking at this Sixers squad, they've obviously climbed up the standings since the last time we did our pod here. Chris sitting in fifth in the conference, five games behind Boston now, sitting two behind the Nets for the second spot in the East. Where do you have them now? When you're starting to see them get to full strength, getting Harden back. Harden's been great, by the way. I think he's been phenomenal for where he's at in his career and what he's been able to do. When you look at this Philly squad again, are they about where you expected them to be? And do you think they can hit another gear that'll take them up the standings even more?
Well, I think they're right exactly where I expect them to be. I'm very intrigued what they do at the NBA trade deadline, right? I don't think they stay the same as they are right now, right? Because it's very interesting to say, because when you look at their roster, it's a roster that's very appealing to Harden's skill set and what they could surround Joel Embiid with. Tons of shooters. Obviously, Tyrese Maxey. You look at guys off the bench like Shake Milton, George Niang. Obviously, I haven't watched too much of Paul Reed's game. Matisse Thybulle may obviously is a name to watch out for. Everyone knows that. You know, his name's been lingering trade talks for a couple years now. But, you know, when you really evaluate the Sixers, obviously they're a team that no one really wants to play in the playoffs. You know what I mean? They're not that one team that – they're not a team that anyone really wants to play in the first round, second round, Eastern Conference Finals, and, you know, et cetera, right? Because they do pose a threat. At the same time, you know, when you really look at it, do you characterize them as a contender in the East? For sure. You know, you can characterize them a contender, but are they a real contender in the East? I'm not totally confident in that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's the halfway point. I don't want to be the guy's like, oh, I gotta see more, but I kind of do gotta see more. And I'm very intrigued what this team's gonna end up doing at the deadline. I'm very intrigued.
Yeah, I'm with you. And then they're going to look at guys like, you know, and maybe a guy like Amir Coffey's if he's available, and the Clippers continue to struggle, but they need some more wing depth, right? And that was something I think they did a great job of addressing, that bringing in guys like Melton, although Daniel House has not been nearly as good as hoped. Yeah, you know, as hope. But I mean, you're getting, again, now you're starting to get some minutes from Matisse, where he's, again, not going to be an offensive, you know, juggernaut by any means, but he's given you some quality minutes there. So you're able to kind of, you know, trust him a little bit more at this point. And again, looking at the odds for Vegas odds makers, like, you know, they like the Sixers. Are they one of the, you know, favorites according to the odds? No, they have the ninth best odds according to Vegas. So I'm with you. I think clearly Joel Embiid is friggin' amazing and awesome and deserves it. Once again, will damn well be in the MVP conversation come time for the end of the year. But I think the Doc thing is always going to linger, where you don't know when this team's going to have a letdown. And sometimes, I mean, obviously for us, you know, when you're watching games on TV, it's a lot different when you're there in person. But when you're looking at the game on TV, you're like, sometimes it's like, okay, is it a matter of execution? Is it a matter of game planning? I think that has kind of always lingered over the Sixers, given that where they're at with Doc kind of calling the shot. So I'm with you, even though the Sixers are 41 games in, they're right at the midway point on pace to win 50 games. And like I mentioned, you know, you look at some of the underlying numbers for the Sixers squad, ranked number 4 in the NBA in net rating, ranked number 4 in defensive rating. They're a top 10 team and number 8 in offensive rating, doing great against opposition when they're shooting three-pointers. So again, a lot of the underlying numbers, not too bad for the Sixers, but at the same time, I'm with you. It's like, have they shown enough to be like, hey, and again, we both agree on this, that Boston is the team to beat in the Eastern Conference. But then you kind of have that second tier now where the Nets have played themselves into that conversation. Obviously Milwaukee's there. But from a Philly standpoint, you want to see a little bit more before you confidently say the Sixers are right up there, if you know what I mean.
Yep, 100%. Can't agree with you more there.
Yeah, and I think that's going to kind of be the key for this team is consistency. You got Harden leading the league in assists. He's doing exactly what he needs to do. Been pretty efficient offensively as well. He's averaging 21.8 points, obviously well below what we're used to seeing from Harden from his heyday. But still, I mean, a top 25 guy, a top 20 at least, you know, should be on the All-Star team again this season. So, again, going to have to give this team a couple of weeks. Let's see if they can get on a run. One thing we have noticed, though, with the Sixers, they do play down to their level of competition. We've seen them lose some games that they should have won, which are going to cost them in the standings. Looking at back at, the, you know, these last games that they have lost, the last four out of their last 17, I mean, you lost at Washington. Again, no excuse to losing that game when Embiid goes off for 48 and 10. They lost to the Pelicans. Okay, you can give them a break there. Pelicans are playing pretty well, but then came up short against Chicago. That was without Joel Embiid in lineup, although friggin' Zach LaVine went off in that game, and then against OKC. So now the Sixers are coming up on this West Coast road trip. They got Utah on Saturday. They got the Lakers, the Clippers, Portland, and then Sacramento, which used to be an easy, you know, looking at that as a win, going to be a tough one next Saturday because the Kings are playing well before they take on the Nets again on Wednesday, the 25th at home against Brooklyn. So again, we're going to keep an eye on what happens with this team, I think, over the next maybe month until we hit the All-Star break. And then we're going to start to get a clear picture of where the Sixers stand in the NBA landscape. Chris, let's take a break here. I want to jump into the couple of other teams, obviously the other New York squad and the Knicks. We'll talk a little bit of Raptors as well. We'll do that coming up here in about a minute.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we are back. So, Chris, my man, you live out there in the New York area. Obviously, like I mentioned off the top, do a great job covering the Nets, but still always going to be a Knicks city, a Knicks area. You know what I mean? They are the team there. And given the fact of all the history, you know, people want to see the Knicks be good. And I always say this, and I'll say it again, even coming from a Philly standpoint, the NBA is better when the Knicks are relevant, right? When the Garden's popping, 100%. People want to be in there. Playing pretty damn good so far. Looking at this team right now, right about, I would say, where I expected them to be in terms of towing the play-in playoff line. They're sitting at the sixth seed right now. The playoffs started today, although they are tied with the Pacers at 23-19. The Knicks would get in as the sixth seed. You're looking at this squad. Julius Randle playing amazing. Should be in line to make the All-Star team. 24.1 points. Been very good there, averaging a double-double, 10.3 rebounds. You got Jalen Brunson, the $100 million man coming in. He's at 21.9. RJ Barrett, 19.9. I really like Emmanuel Quickley as well. He's been doing a good job. When you look at this squad, Chris, and we talked about this a little bit before we started rolling, that the deadline's coming up in about a month here. This Knicks team, I believe, has four first-round picks, right, over the next year or next 2 years or whatever it is.
Yeah, they got all the bunch of contingencies that go with it.
Yeah, not necessarily going to be maybe a top five pick, but I mean, they have assets there that they can make a move. And we are probably over the next couple of weeks going to start get some more indications as to who's going to be available, who isn't. Maybe there's some disgruntled star on a bad team that's looking for a way out. Somebody like Bradley Beal, looking around, like, I mean, the Pistons with Bogdanovich, they're going to hold out and try and get whatever they can for him. But, you know, looking at the other teams that are sitting towards the bottom of the standings, unless you're the Lakers, where you got LeBron, Anthony Davis, nobody really. And the Raptors, another team to look out for with Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet. But, let me start with this, Chris, because you know a lot about the Knicks as well.
Yep.
First off, as constructed, let's say they don't make a move. Are they going to be a playoff team, not a play-in team? Do you think they have enough to hang on to that sixth spot?
I think they'll be a play-in. I don't think they'll be a playoff. Don't get me wrong. They prove me wrong, but it's like right on the border, but they're tinking towards the kind of the play-in. They're tinking towards the play-in.
Okay. And you think that's kind of going to be the cutoff for this squad?
Yeah, I'd say it's the cutoff, you know, because when you really look at their squad, like Julius Randle's doing what he's doing, right? You're like, he's meeting expectations. I would give him like an A for what he's doing. I think he's one of three guys that are averaging 20 and 10 on the year. Then you kind of go down the roster, what they're going to do with, obviously, Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson's doing, obviously, when you see the contract and everything and the demand that he's obviously, Knicks fans hope that he could be the savior or whatever the case is. But, you know, it's kind of very similar to, I don't want to call it the D'Angelo Russell, what he did with the Nets, that type of effect, but he's having that effect, you know, because he is he's producing, he's becoming a fan favorite. Now to give him also an A, you know what I mean? He's given the offense a ton of structure. He's having the best season from a Knicks point guard since you got to go back to Stephon Marbury. Like, I get it's like 40 games into the year, 41 games in the year, but since Stephon Marbury, name me a point guard that's been having the type of year that Jalen Brunson's having. So, you know, like at the value that he did at the $104 million investment, you know, like he's doing what he's supposed to be doing in the Garden. He could try to make it a little attractive. Then you look at guys, obviously RJ Barrett's kind of like, you know, not meeting expectations, not being lower than expectations, kind of in that middle ground. You know, I would give him kind of in the low B range, you know, stuff like that. And obviously Quentin Grimes has been kind of a success story down there, becoming a fan favorite, diamond in the rough type player, you know, what this team does with Cam Reddish, you know, and same thing with Emmanuel Quickly. If you package those two up, you could probably get someone mid-tier.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be the, like, don't get me wrong. I watch a little bit of the Knicks, same thing with Fournier, right? You don't know Fournier. He's been obviously benched recently. And you know, his role continues to get smaller and everything. I don't want, like, it's going to take a lot. And I know the Hawks are looking for a shooting big man in return for John Collins. But if I'm the Knicks, I would ring Atlanta Hawks phone and see what they want for John Collins. I think that it would be a good fit for John Collins, because I think it's a mutual good fit. Because with John Collins, the Hawks don't use him as a small ball five, right? They don't use him as a small ball five. So that allows Mitchell Robinson to maintain his role with the Knicks. At the four spot, like I mentioned before, you know, that's Julius Randle, and, like, you know, he gets to tinker around with the wing or whatever the case is. But I think John Collins would give this team a little more of a dimension. I know everyone's going to be like, well, he could give you the same thing that Julius Randle's giving you right now. It's not a clear-cut fit. At the same time, though, you could either play the game two ways. You could do the have John Collins come in, weigh it out, build his trade stock, then flip him. You got, obviously, I don't know what his contract situation's like. I think, is he an expiring? He's on, no, he's not an expiring deal.
Collins?
Yeah, Collins. He's not an expiring.
No, I think they re-signed him pretty recently, right? Wasn't the deal he signed a 5-year extension for 125 million.
Oh, they did.
Million.
You're right.
Yeah.
Because I don't, you know, with the Nets, I don't think that I don't think the fit's there. But that's a story for another day. But, you know, like, they do need the upgrade. The Knicks are kind of they're like the Raptors, who we're going to talk about next. They're stuck. You know what I mean? Like, unless they kind of find a disgruntled superstar. And I know there's been rumblings from some Knicks fans saying, well, Trae Young, monitor Trae Young. You know, the story's already there. You know, you could pair him next to Jalen Brunson, you know, all that. I get that, but what's the likelihood that's going to happen? I doubt the Hawks are going to they're going to completely sell like that and just completely go into a whole rebuild that's going to cost them 3-4 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're just stuck. You know, if they could get a guy that's, you know, maybe, you know, has potential and, you know, whatever the case. But overall, like, you know, they're in a solid state where they are in their rebuild. I would think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and they got, and like you mentioned, you know, we're talking about looking at the fact that, you know, this squad has cap room. They got they can make, again, not a plethora of it, but they can, you know, kind of look at getting some wiggle room there and making some moves. And as I mentioned, you look at these draft picks. They got 4 first rounders in 2023. Again, bunch of conditions on those, top 10, top 14, top 18 protected. Looking at next year, they got their own first round pick and a bunch of second rounders. And so they got the Bucks 2025 first rounder. That's top 4 protected. So again, who knows where Brooklyn's going to be in a couple of years. They do have the assets to make a move. But I'm with you. You know what? I mean, look, Randall's nice. You mentioned that. I think Mitchell Robinson, you look at the underlying numbers for him. He's been great in terms of when the Knicks have him on the court. They're 12.9 points better per 100 possessions. But they need the guy. You know what I mean? And I think that
number one option for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And then you got Randall, you got Brunson, Barrett. You know, that's a nice 2-3-4 or 3-4-5. You know what I mean? In terms of if you're looking at having a rounded out roster with players who bring different skill sets and obviously being high level players. But if you're able to bring in another guy, they gotta go for it at this point. Because again, the NBA to me, although we as we talked about before the break there, you got Boston, you got Brooklyn, you got Milwaukee. Obviously, the Cavs are playing great with Donovan Mitchell there now. The Sixers, another squad that's going to have something to say come time for the postseason. And then the West, you know, completely wide open at this point. If you're the Knicks, again, depending on who you can bring in, what you're giving up, I do think, okay, maybe not this season, but next year, like in the offseason coming up in the summertime, make a deal that brings in the guy, whoever's available, and whatever you can get obviously you don't want to overpay. They don't have anybody coming up in the system that is, you know, has the potential to be a number one type superstar. But I think if they're able to get that, keep most of the pieces that they have already there, I think the Knicks definitely can be a contender. Again, not this season maybe, but next year or the year after that. But again, it's going to depend on, and with the landscape in the NBA being as it is in terms of having like 15 teams who have, you know, championship aspirations, and then you have these bottom teams. And like I mentioned, the Detroits, the Charlottes, the San Antonios, the Houstons, they have good young players. They're not giving them up. You know what I mean? At this point where they're at as franchises and as organizations, but you're going to have to look around and say, okay, either A, like I said, disgruntled superstar on a bad team. Bradley Beal totally fits that mold. Looking around even at a team like the Timberwolves, who are underperforming. So again, they're going to have to look at something like that, where another squad is going to be like, let's blow this up and, you know, let's try and rebuild here and get what we can get. And I think that's where you're looking at maybe Karl-Anthony Towns down the line, a year down the line, where they look at it and say, shit, this isn't working. We gotta get rid of this guy. Or maybe something happens in Phoenix, right? Where the Suns obviously had that hot start, now playing without Devin Booker. Things not looking good for Phoenix in terms of where this team was, right? Because you look at the fact that they obviously made the finals in 21, came up short in 22 in terms of losing to Dallas in game seven there in the second round. But you look at where this team was at the end of November at 15-6. And now you look at the fact that since then they're 6-16. So it's like, you know, that might be a team that looks like, hey, let's get rid of Devin Booker and try and get a King's ransom for him. So again, I think that's where I'm at with the Knicks. It's like kind of wait and see if you can get into the playoffs, you know, get that extra postseason revenue coming in for James Dolan, the shittiest owner in the NBA. But I think they'll be in a good spot. Let's jump ship over to the final team in the Atlantic, Chris, the only team that's not in a playoff position or play in position at this point. And honestly, to me, playing below expectations, the Toronto Raptors tied for the 10th and final spot, sitting at 19-23, have won three in a row. We talked about this before, and I think we're going to probably say a lot of the same when it comes to the Raptors. What do you do right now? You're Masai Ujiri. Obviously, he gets credit for being one of the best executives in the league, Chris. What do you do if you're him? The deadline's coming up in a month. You have Pascal Siakam. You got Fred VanVleet. Obviously, you got the reigning rookie of the year, Scottie Barnes, who maybe hasn't developed the way people wanted to see in season two, but again, still a valuable young asset there. What do you do if you're Masai Ujiri at this point?
I'm thinking right now, you know, it's funny that we just talked about the Knicks. I'm thinking that if the Knicks should incline on OG Anunoby. I don't know what they rank in the sports books, you know, with you know, the trade market kind of over-unders and all that stuff. But OG Anunoby could be attractive. I think he's definitely a piece that the Raptors should think about moving, seeing the value that they could do. Raptors, you know, like I said before, they're not the Knicks because obviously they have more players that could kind of support a star, right? Like Kawhi era, you know, that's that type of team. You know, if you add a number one star or superstar to that team, they could become a realistic, you know, championship contender. Now, I'm not going to say, oh, like, you know, like the Knicks, Bucks, Celtics. I mean, not Knicks, Celtics, Bucks, and the Nets, right? But, you know, you look at the Raptors, and I think that obviously they're stuck too. You know, obviously you know who's untouchable on that roster. Obviously no bigger name than Scottie Barnes. Obviously what they do with Pascal Siakam. Pascal Siakam is probably the most underappreciated superstar or star in the league based on the numbers. So, you know, you got to generate there. You got to see where Masai comes from, because obviously for a lot of contenders are obviously going to weigh out this market and see as a seller's market considering how strong the draft is coming up in June. And with Masai, I think that he does have the pieces to make a deal, you know. So I could see the Raptors going both ways. If they do become sellers, I don't think they're going to be huge sellers. I think maybe you could kind of shut off a guy like Fred VanVleet, obviously OG Anunoby I named before. Then you kind of go other down. Like, I think those are your main two guys that you'd probably want to ship out. But outside of that, you know, I don't think they'll go beyond selling, like become a real bona fide seller and kind of restart a rebuild or put themselves back a couple steps in a rebuild. But I wouldn't rule them out as kind of – I would put them obviously as a team to watch at this deadline. How about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think they're going to – I don't think that they're going to make a charge. Again, might sneak in as a number 10 seed, but I don't think they're going to climb up the standings as currently constructed. But yeah, they got some pieces, man, that they can look at moving. You mentioned OG Anunoby. You look at a guy like Gary Trent Jr. too, right? Struggling a little bit. He's a minus point differential in terms of net rating on that squad. Precious Achiuwa, not giving him what we thought he would be able to give him. And Otto Porter, in the short amount of time he has played there, was a disaster too, right? You know what I mean? Like it. So things haven't worked out for the Raptors, which again, the running joke is on NBA Twitter. You got to just a bunch of 6'9 dudes and just go out and play some rap ball. Yeah. But I do think it's interesting that we're kind of stuck in this position with the squad that. Again, you have the assets and you feel like you have the executive team in place and Nick Nurse. Some people think he's overrated. A lot of people look at him as one of the best coaches in the league. And so you look at where this squad is at, and obviously winning that 2019 championship bought a whole lot of good faith. You know what I mean? For that team. So looking at a different thing, I think Scottie Barnes at this point, we laughed at in the offseason where the rumor was that the Raptors wouldn't be willing to part with Scottie Barnes in a Kevin Durant trade, which was, I don't want to swear, but friggin' stupid. You know what I mean? If anybody did think that, but again, you have a piece there. They got some picks. So again, I'm interested to see. I'm with you though. I think the one team to watch in terms of, like we were mentioning there, that the team that maybe doesn't have the, is at the level that it wanted to be and is at a position that it could blow it up. I think the Raptors and maybe the Timberwolves are the two to watch as we get into playoff time.
I agree with that. 100%.
Yeah. All right, Chris, you know what? Let's wrap things up there. It was good to finally get back and do our Atlantic Division mixtape show again. We'll be doing this consistently now.
Blood flowing on this one.
Yeah. No, we'll get this going every Friday. And like you said, we're going to the second half of the season. We know that people are going to start getting a little bit more interested. People want to start, you know, figuring out what the hell is going on with these teams. So we'll definitely keep you updated here. Chris, as always, thanks for joining me, man. Love the work that you do for us at Next Daily and at SI. And looking forward to talking to you again next Friday.
Looking forward as well. We got a couple interesting weeks coming up. Well, who's getting moved? Who's staying? You know, and yeah,
it's
going
to be fun, man.
Let the circus begin.
All right. You can follow Chris on Twitter as well at C Milholland. That's MILHOLENSB. Check me out at JazzKang21. That's JASKANG21. Like I mentioned, subscribe to our SB Nation podcast network. You can subscribe to Liberty Ballers. You can subscribe to Celtics Blog. We're going to have you covered throughout that as well. And of course, check out all our sites, Nets Daily, Celtics Blog, Liberty Ballers, basically every single site that we have in the Atlantic does a great job. So we'll have you covered for all the teams there. And like I mentioned, Chris and I will be back next week to do another episode for you.